Blog Talk Radio.
All right, Scott, it's all yours. Take it away. We have, I see John. Let me look through my looking glass. Oh, I see Big Jim's there, too. Jim and John is in the switchboard. If you want to get on, please push one on your keypad. Scott, it's all yours. And I'll put Jim
Thank
and
you.
John. John, hold on. Jim, you're on, too. There you guys go.
Hey, guys.
Hi, John.
How you doing tonight?
Hi, Jim.
Hey, what's up?
I'm doing all right. Doing better than the University of Michigan basketball team.
Yeah, I see that right now. They're down by one, but I'm more important looking for the send-off package Tuesday, you know. That would be great.
Yeah. I don't know.
That's the day we get a guilty plea, right?
Oh, that's for Norwood, isn't it?
Yeah, Deadwood, doesn't he plead Tuesday?
Oh, I thought it was the following week. Wow.
I think it's April 4th. I could be wrong, Scott. I thought he had to plead April 4th, and then toward the end of May, he's going to get sentenced. But
oh.
I've been wrong before.
Yeah, the 4th would be what, Thursday? Yeah, Thursday.
Yes.
Wow, that's... Well, we'll see what happens, you know, because I think that he hasn't gotten them telling his tale of woe yet, because we know that Dennis Williams openly admitted that he told these guys to use some of these funds out of these accounts. He has not yet been indicted or questioned that we know of. Is that correct?
Correct.
Right. So, you know, and we don't know what happened with Cindy Estrada. Jimmy Settles thinks because he retired that he's going to be, you know, unscathed with this whole thing, and I don't think so, because I'm sure you and John are aware of the article about the flower funds.
Yes, and I don't see how Jerry Castillo can get out of that, because a lot of that shit happened while he was financial boy.
Exactly. And I mean, that implicates everybody from the regional directors up. If you read the article, it goes from the president, the vice president, some of their administration, and the article also specifically said regional directors. Now, Jimmy Settle said that he left them funds behind for the next person coming in. At least that's what I picked up out of that article. I'm going, why would you leave all that money sitting there for the next person? Because there shouldn't have been no money there. It's supposed to be used for funerals. You people out there in the radio land, you heard us right. Funerals. They collect money. And if you read this article, it says that some of these administrative people and some of the higher, I can't even say elected, the higher appointed people who make up our leaders to make up our leadership, they actually told some of these people that if they didn't put into the flower fund, they threatened them to go back to the assembly lines or back to the plants to work on the floor. That's pretty gutsy, don't you think?
Wow, Michigan State just went up by two. Keep talking, Scott. Keep talking. But no, I'm just
How's
trying
John
to figure
doing?
All this out. But now my question is to you, as I look at the LL2, and I'm no genius on reading this, but if I'm not thinking right, didn't Norwood retire in January of 18?
Yeah, you're not the only person who brought that up. Somebody, Brian Keller
did
brought
you
that
see,
up last
Did you
night.
See what they said they paid him last year?
He
got
$220
on the books plus, I don't know, there was an attorney fee there, not of a hell of a lot of money, $11,000 or some shit like that. But we all knew we were flipping the bill on that, too. That's what sucks about that.
Yeah, and that's the thing that people have got to pay attention to. All these people who are going through all this proceedings, I don't know how it works. I get to tell you that I know how it works. I just think it's wrong. These individuals, while they were working on behalf of the United Auto Workers Union at the international level, when they were committing these crimes or said crimes yet to be determined, that our union is paying their legal fees when they were doing wrong like this and they were got caught doing something illegal, you and I and John and Don and all of the people that are involved in the union, make up the union, not the leadership, but the union itself, we shouldn't have to pay for that.
Me and the old man got in a hell of an argument over this, Scott, me and Dick.
Yeah.
And I've asked him to come on the show to explain that to us because he tells me, and I'm not going to get into it because I don't know the ins or the outs, but it's under some crap that was instituted to them guys in the 50s before he even got there. And I believe it's an insurance policy that we're stuck with that covers that or some shit.
Kind of like a liability insurance in case something like that happened?
You would have to get it from him. I'm not going to touch that one because I would corrupt it. I'm not going to get into it because I'm like you. I'm madder than hell that, you know, they screwed up and we got to pay their... We got to pay for their screw up. That's bullshit. We already paid. How does FCA negotiate a contract this time if it's based off a contract that's tainted? Explain that one. Judge already said it's a tainted contract.
Yeah, the judge. In case people didn't hear that, you want to repeat that again? Who said that?
A federal judge said that contract was tainted because of the buyouts, the gifts that was given to let certain things of the contract go through, that is in writing. Our contracts are based on the last contract. How the hell is it right for a FCA worker, UAW FCA worker, how are they going to get a fair shake off a tainted contract? Go back to the 2011 and negotiate off that one, damn it. They still had their window in that one, remember?
Yep.
Their doorway into Tier 2.
Yep. You're right.
You can speak on this better than anybody, Barbosa. Chime in.
There you go.
Well, I don't know that I'm any more of an expert than anyone else, but I am in total. I think that... we should negotiate based off the older contract because this one was tainted. I don't care what Dennis Williams or any other of those folks wanted to say something else, but I'll just be nice. I don't care what they claim. Not going to believe a word that comes out of their mouth. That they're not going to convince me, and especially when the judge said that he believed that the contracts were tainted because of the collusion. I think that you're absolutely right, Jim. We're going to be negotiating behind the eight ball because we had a contract that was. That was bought and paid for.
Right. Yeah, Jim, you still there?
No, I'm listening to every bit of it because I'm sitting here banging my head. Why ain't nobody raising it up? Why? Because they're a business, remember? They don't, you know, and then they, you know, they're just worrying about growing the membership outside of the auto industry. Myself, if you notice, they grabbed the casino workers. They picked up a bunch more teachers. It's sad that the way they treat us, and what's very sad is the way they treat us at our own convention. Every officer there is a sergeant of arms, yet they pass out noisemakers to cause distractions. What the hell type of Democratic Party does that, people? Look at who you're electing and sending there. They're taking partay into this and saying, hey, wait a minute. They're playing the game. And they're coming back and telling you bullshit.
And if it's not the noisemakers, right, you're called out of order.
Yep.
Even
yeah.
when you're
yeah.
not out of order.
You're right. You know, I mean, Scott went in there well prepared.
Let me get back with you, the old man's calling.
All right. Anyway, John, Scott went in there. I thought well prepared. Yeah, had himself versed with the Robert's Rules of Order, and went in there and come to find out. He was not out of order, as you talked about, but that needs to be seen or dealt with, and I'm sure he's appropriate actions try to get that addressed, and I'm sure he'll get, excuse my language, a layman excuse from our union leadership down at Solidarity House as to how that happened. Doesn't matter now. It's all after the fact, you know?
Yeah, I started reading. I saw Scott's appeal, and I started reading most of it. And, I think you're right. They're gonna pull their bullshit just like they did when I filed my appeal during the delegate election because I was running for constitutional delegate.
Right.
And according to our UAW Constitution, no candidate is supposed to be using union property for campaigning. And somebody at our local had hung signs on the driveway gates, campaigning for people I was running against, and also had it on plastered on their vehicle, which was no more than I would say maybe 10 yards at the most from the front door of the local.
Wow.
And so I filed what you call it, and of course I got a bullshit response, and they weren't going to do anything about it. And of course, by the time I got my response, the convention was over.
Of course.
So, yeah.
Well, let me say this.
And I could have appealed that decision, but.
I've been saying this a long time. You guys are going and following the format that the Solidarity House designed. I mean, you can appeal all you want to appeal, but at the end of the day, they're going to shut it down like they have in the past. They control every convention, whether it's the Constitutional Convention, the Bargaining Convention. They control the negotiations. They control the outcome of us ratifying the contract. I mean, they control every aspect. So till the membership realizes that we have a bunch of white-collar workers running this union and eating this union from within, and they don't support pensions, they don't support equality, they don't support their membership. And until we realize that, and unify, like our leadership is unified with management, we're going to be on the losing end. And the only way to confront these people is going through the Solidarity House gates. And I've said that over and over and over again. And for whatever reason, majority of the membership think they can beat the process that was designed by the leadership. You're not going to beat it. So you're going to have to come with that 1930s mentality and go through the gates. Otherwise, we're going to continue to lose jobs. Plants are going to continue to close. Shifts will be shut down. And eventually, the autonomous vehicles will come, and you'll lose another 60,000 jobs. Your
right.
union has sold you out and unionized every aspect. I mean, they've unionized municipalities, casinos, everything. But at the end of the day, when this union collapses from within, they're going to leave with two pensions and their own health care, Viva. And you guys are going to leave with nothing. I'm just saying,
right.
the membership better figure it out soon. You're running out of time.
Oh, absolutely. For the folks who are in the switchboard, if you want to ask a question or have a comment or if you want to share your thought, press 1 on your keypad. If you want to add any of this discussion, please press 1 on your keypad and
there. Just like the National Labor Relations Board. If the Democrats control the House and the Senate and the White House, I mean, they put their own people in the National Labor Relations Board. When the Republicans control everything, they put their own people in the National Labor Relations Board. But neither party has done anything for health care as far as putting caps on pharmaceuticals, on health care providers or health care insurers, and therefore our health care is going skyrocket, and the companies want to drop the health care like they dropped the pensions. And that's going to happen eventually. The National Labor Relations Board is not representing labor. They're representing big business. They're representing Wall Street. Both political parties are representing Wall Street. At the end of the day, you guys got to figure this out. You got to realize that both the Democrats and the Republicans and your leadership are standing with Wall Street while the rest of you take concessions or lose your jobs.
Right.
This ain't
right.
about cap. This is a different capitalism from back in the day. This is global capitalism. So whether you got communist views or you got socialist views or you got today's capitalism views, none of these systems work anymore. When each country was sovereign and it was America versus America back in the day, capitalism worked. But once everything became global and these companies were able to play each country's labor market against each other by talking about North American losses, but they don't discuss about what their global gains are, and they make you think that they're losing when, in fact, they're gaining off the backs of labor across the world, they're going to collapse the world economy. You cannot sustain a country's infrastructure if you're giving these companies corporate tax breaks off the backs of labor. And these same companies are cutting our wages and benefits. Something's
right.
going to give. And I'm just saying,
right.
the people better wise up.
Yeah, I agree. You know, we were talking kind of about the flower fund a little bit before you come on. And how... despicable, I guess, would be my word, in my opinion, what these people were doing. You know what I mean? On the flower fund?
Well, they were lining their pockets. They've been lining their pockets.
All right.
I mean, just like the $400 million. Where'd the $400 million that they utilized out of the strike fund to unionize the South on hotels and bus rides? Then another $1 million in Palm Springs, California. And that's not even including the NTC funds that they lined their pockets with. And then they told you that they're going to increase your union dues just to turn around and say you don't have a right to strike because we're worried about the big three's market share.
Right.
And then they became then they became shareholders in the very companies we work for. GM, they held shares in GM and Chrysler, and then they overseen the VEBA, so now they become healthcare providers, and they're like a contract house. They supply labor, but they don't represent labor anymore. They don't support equality.
Right.
They don't support pensions. They don't support shorter work hours. They don't support nothing but their own pockets. Somebody posted the LM2 the other day, an updated LM2 that came out on the 29th of this month. Norwood Jewell retired January of 2018, but according to that LM2, he got his full salary for 2018. So how is that?
I got a question toward that, Brian. This is Jimmy.
You got what, Jim?
I got a possibility on that. I'm beating my head on the wall trying to figure that out. But there, if I'm not mistaken, if they have money left in their charity, Scott, can't they take that onto their retirement when they leave? I think they can.
I don't think they can.
No, because the charity's supposed to be
non-profit. Okay, so let's say this, even hypothetically saying they can. The fact is, Norwood Jewell and the others are under investigation, and Bob King knew about the situation. You know Dennis Williams knew. How come nobody brought up charges on any of them with the executive board and had them fired?
That's why I'm waiting to see who Norwood gives. He had to give some fish. Nancy gave everybody else. He gave you Dennis Williams, if I understand this shit right.
I'm looking at this LMQ that we're talking about right now, and if you look, if you follow the charts now, for his gross salary for the year, for last year, it said $1,844. But under column F, where it says disbursements for official business, Norwood Jewell got $217,651. Let me repeat.
And then $11,000 for an attorney, right?
I did not see that on here. This says $1,844 for a salary, $217,651 for disbursements for official business. And then for column G, which is other disbursements not reported in D through F, it had that down as zero for a grand total of $219,495. Now, what I'm going to know is between Brian, John, Jim, myself, is why is it not reported on here if he was paid out of the VEBA? You won't see that anywhere on here, I don't think.
And that is what I have been bringing up, and when I mentioned the loopholes in the 501c laws. When it comes to LM2 reporting, it is not detailed.
Well,
not like with business. So there, it makes it more difficult to see exactly what they're spending the money on and where it's coming from.
Doesn't that show up on the 990s? Scott, I think that shit comes up on the 990s.
It comes up on the 990 because a few years back before you joined the show, I had copies of these. The late Teresa Dodge took her time with me on one afternoon. It took us hours, and I do mean hours, through the IRS public files to find this stuff on the 990s pertaining to the VEBA. And what a lot of people don't know, when you're in IRS and you're are trying to go through this. If you hit a wrong button or you hit the go back arrow, if you are on step 16, it automatically takes you back to step 1. And you have to, so what you do is, as you're going, you have to have a piece of paper and a pen, and you literally have to write down what step you were at and the information you have to continue to the next step. And it's a very tedious, on purpose, I think it's a very tedious project to do. We did find information.
They're very huge files.
Yes, and we found out in the 990s, through the 990s, I was actually able to find for General Motors and for Ford. I couldn't find the Chrysler, we didn't get that far. But we could see on General Motors who the individuals were who sat on the VIVA board at that time that the union had hired as far as professional people. Not the people from the union or, you know, how the whole thing works. But so you would have the person who oversees the trust, the administrator.
Right, because that's how the administrator found out how Norwood got both his kids on the VIVA and in there without ever working a day in the plant.
Yeah, and when you find out, when you looked at the administrator that they hired, they were getting paid, I want to say, like $1.5 million for the year, which you're overseeing the better part of, what, $600 to $700 million? That's kind of chump change for administrator's fee. Usually you get more than that. But then when you start looking at the other individuals that sit on the trust, the money man, the guy that was the CPA, now he was making like $10 million a year. Some of these other people were making between $1.5 to like $5 million a year. Well, you keep dropping that down, and then all of a sudden, then you start seeing the category it falls under is not voluntary. Honorary trustee. And under the honorary trustee, you've seen Dennis Williams' name, Cindy Estrada, Norwood Jewell, and
Jimmy Settle.
You even see Bob King on
there.
He was gone at that time, but he was on the earlier ones.
Yeah.
No, Bob King is on page 17, and they paid him $2,800 for something.
Does it say Bob or B?
It says Bob King.
Does it say Bob and not just B King? Because there is a Bill King, too, that is like Cindy's right-hand man. He's also, you people should know, he is from my corrupt local 659 Norwich.
It says Bob King, president, on page 17.
Does that see item number 69 for Bob King. It says President Bob King. And you're right, $2,874. But anyway.
Hey, by the way, hold on, Scott. Anybody want to, I'm going to be away from the computer for a few minutes. So anybody wants to get on, you got about 30 seconds to push one on your keypad and I'll get you right on. By the way, Michigan State is beat Duke 68-67. Congratulations to Michigan State. It's all yours, Scott.
Right.
Woo-hoo.
Hey, did the old man call in? Because he was the one that pulled me out and wanting a phone number.
I don't know. There's a whole bunch of people on the switchboard, so I'm going to wait about 30 seconds. I got to check on my dog. He was injured, and I want to make sure he's all right. And I'll be right back. But if anybody wants to push, which one on your
but
keypad?
Scott,
John O'Neill.
Those
990s
are so detailed, but like you said, man, by the time you open them up, you get so far along, you better have a damn good print. Well, I couldn't even print them because my printer wouldn't hold that big of a file.
What happens on that 990, though, is, I'll finish my thought real quick, is not only does the president
who receives the most, but it's under a federal guideline. He doesn't break the $30,000 mark. I believe the president gets like $29,800. The vice president and the regional directors all get, I want to say, $27,800. They're not far off. Neither was $1,000 off from what the president gets as an honorary trustee. So it's not just the president and the vice president. It's the regional directors get this too. Is that on this LM2? No. It's on the 990. So I don't know how they tie the LM2 with the 990. You see what I'm saying? Somehow they're filing separate. So we can't see that's income from here. Is that income that comes under the VIBA then that we don't see? You see what I'm saying, guys?
Well, that's the thing. With the 501c laws, right, they can lump those payments together and not break them out individually. Now, with the 990s, right, that is personal income reporting for federal income tax, which is different. So when they're making the disbursements to the individuals, they have to file the proper income tax documents for those so that you can get the detailed information.
But so they got to itemize.
Yeah, they have to itemize, but they don't have to itemize in the LM2 reporting. They can lump it all together. That's a loophole in the system, and they use it for their benefit, which means it makes it more difficult for us to keep an eye on them to make sure that they're doing things properly and on the up and up. And that's why when I brought it up to Cindy and asked her why she doesn't address this and change the bylaws and the description of the Secretary-Treasurer, well, I can't do that. I can't change the Constitution. Well, no, you can't change it by yourself. Duh.
Well, why can't they? The executive board decided they'd vote without the delegates on raising the amount that you get in the strike fund from $50 a week.
Well, that's true. The board can, right? But she was referring to she can't change it individually on her own.
But she can present it to the executive board, am I correct?
She sure can. And she could also present it to the membership, to the constitutional delegates as well.
Why would they do that?
Yeah. And I brought that, and she had no response for that because she's a scumbag.
It's because they're looking out for themselves. That's why.
Yeah.
Well, they... Just like the contracts, guys, they want us ignorant as they can. Because you're ignorant doesn't mean you're stupid. It just means you simply don't know. And the way they use their bullshit language, like you got work scheduled for you, they went to allocation, the way they change the damn meaning of a word, they play us to be ignorant. The union is supposed to cover us there. Hell, they're sitting
in the same toilet. You're right. It is about language. Just like Lordstown, how they sit there and say they're idling the plant instead of just coming out saying they're shutting the plant down completely so people can make a decision on whether they're going to transfer or collect unemployment. It's a trick with words. Just like when they sit there in 2015 and said, we're going to bring all Tier 2 up to Tier 1 wages with an 8-year with an 8-year language, but you can't guarantee 8 years of language in a 4-year agreement.
And if you look at that dollar amount, Brian, you never get up to what the hell I'm getting anyway.
Right. I mean, well, when you start looking at the pension and everything, yeah.
We can thank the scumbag lawyers for those word games a lot of times because you know, it just doesn't make sense that, you know, when you read our contracts, right, and you read a word in there and you think of the definition of your head in your head that you were taught with the American, dictionary, right? They don't use standard common definitions for words in our contracts. No, if you really want to truly fully know the meaning, you've got to use the Black's Law Dictionary, which has totally different definitions for common words that we use. Why is that?
That is correct. I won't argue that.
Yeah, so right. they can interpret the language as they see fit at that point
right.
in time.
Right.
Yep.
So the lawyers can justify their existence and they're scum. But
the reality is this. Most people on the floor are just common people, right? We go in there, we build vehicles and things like that. None of us went to law school. And if you go to Black Lake, you learn the basics. You know, you might get a little grievance class here or there, but they're not going to teach you everything. They teach you the very basics. The fact is they don't want you knowing what they know. And the union is comprised of lawyers, research teams, everybody. So it's not like Gary Jones or Dennis Williams runs that union by themselves. They got a bunch of people up there that are degreed in different areas. And so there's no way for the membership to interpret that contract the same. And with the situation with Scott, I mean, the purpose of the bargaining convention is to talk about resolutions, to pass resolutions. And they just automatically said he was out of order. How was he out of order? Explain. They couldn't explain. But the fact is, what they did explain is they don't want to hear shit from the membership. That's why they shut Scott down. And that's why they told them to appeal it, because they know the bargaining convention is going to be over. They know once it goes through the appeals process, they're going to shut the appeals down anyways. So they don't care. It was the same thing that Rebecca did when she filed her grievance with the executive board on the union dues for her temps, right? They shut that down as well, because the temps are still – paying 2.5 hours in union dues, and they're still violating the UAW Constitution on paying that 1.44%. So the fact is, the leadership don't want to hear us. They're not going to listen to us, and the only way they're going to listen to us is if we go through the Solidarity House gates. Otherwise, they control the bargaining convention floors. We don't. They control the delegates. We don't. As long as the membership don't want to unify, we're going to keep going down this path. My thing is,
well, I know
we got a lot of experienced people. We have a lot of experienced people. If we were all just to come to a round table, talk about what's going on, talk about solutions, talk about ideas, and put these ideas together and put these solutions together, and we got to implement these solutions. But we can't just keep talking about it because, I mean, we've been going in circles for decades after decades of us losing. So it's time for us to get together, get all the right people together. We need to start leading. We need to start organizing. And we need to start figuring out how we're going to get this membership to unify like our leadership and management's unified on screwing us over. But something's got to happen.
Well, we only have those guys in control because the membership has intentionally been kept in the dark. And I think that the membership now is starting to see the light and see what's been going on because, thanks to social media, we've been able to talk to one another and share these things. I think through continued education... We can take control away from them because they have a bunch of delegates in their back pocket. But if the membership votes those people out and replaces them with good people and not sellouts, we could take control back that way as well.
Well, let me say this. For one, how do you know who's good and who ain't? Two, how do you know who is smart enough or educated enough to take those positions, okay? Because the fact is, outside of the news media coming out with the corruption and the collusion between our leadership on the UAW Chrysler side and management on the Chrysler side, and then all the wasted money with Palm Springs and trying to unionize the South. The fact that we've lost pensions, COLA, the job bank, and all the rest of the concessions we've taken, the membership still hasn't unified or done nothing. So what's it take to get this membership to unify and actually stand together as one to progress forward together? I mean, what's it take?
I don't know.
I'm at a loss when it comes to that.
I will say this. We never lost COLA. It was redirected by a guy by the name of Gary Jones. It would take an act of Congress to get back because they took it through an act of Congress from us and put it toward the VIVA. It funds the VIVA. That, I don't know. I don't think there is answer for that, but it's there. But
so let me say this.
AIF back, Brian, me and Dick figured this out, and I think Scott worked on this for a while. If we had just AIF back, we'd be over $50 an ounce. So the point is, yes, we need something. They have sold us out. But what I'm beginning to think about this one. I don't want to be the Grim Reaper, but say there's an end game. What I mean by is the end game is when we get to the electronic vehicle with four motors on each wheel and a little bit of steering, you ain't going to need shit for employees, people. Think about that. You know, you're going to have all robots slapping in, three people wiring it up, and it's gone. Adios.
That's right.
That's what I'm wondering. Right. We ain't thinking about that. We're trying to save a whole membership, and they're thinking, hey, there ain't going to be nobody here, so let's go get the casino workers, let's get the motel workers, let's get the teachers. That'll be our new dues-paying people. We don't care about the auto worker. They're gone. They're a dinosaur. Think about that, ugly bugger.
Well, the funny thing about that is if you kill off the middle class, the casinos end up shutting down, and everything else keeps shutting down. It'll be a domino effect, meaning the U.S. dollar will collapse because it can't sustain an infrastructure without the middle class. I mean, if you're giving these companies corporate tax breaks just to stay in the city or the state or the country, and they're going automated, who's buying this stuff?
Exactly.
Yeah. Eventually, yeah. It's called the New World Order.
Yeah. Whether people like individuals or not, that's the question is. The point I'm going to say is the president has said that we are having problems at the border. And I know everybody says we know we got a problem at the border, we don't have a problem at the border. The person under the last administration, under Obama, I want to say his name is Jay Johnson, maybe. He was the head of Department of Homeland Security.
That's his name.
DHS.
Yes.
He has come out and he said just yesterday afternoon, that he himself has been down by the dirt, certain areas around the border where they're saying they have the most influx right now. It's up to 4,000 people wanting to come across. He says this is not doable. He said even if you throw a bunch more manpower, he said this is a problem. So my point is, the president says, Mexico, deal with the influx that's coming in here, or I'm going to shut the borders down. Now, that's where I want to have a discussion. What would happen if the president closed the borders down? They said it would cost businesses $1.7 billion a week for the borders to be closed. How much of our stuff from
it's costing us $1.5 billion a year for the illegals.
Right.
Exactly.
But my point is as far as the auto industry goes, if the Mexican border was to go down, let's say for a week or 2 weeks, that would close almost all of our auto industries down, wouldn't it?
Well, I could tell you right now, you could see the market coming to a total crash or getting damn near to it at the auto industry. If that affects the auto industry, you could expect something with the you could expect the Dow to go down.
Yeah. We had a half an hour to the show. So we're gonna go to 8:30. If somebody knows. And if you're in the Spring Board and you want to put a join the conversation, please press 1. We'd all love to hear from you. All right.
Scott,
back to Mexico. Yeah.
Hold on for me. Did you want me to play that? I got the tape with Jay Johnson. You want me to play it? Homeland Security?
Sure. If you want to, I mean, that would be hear it.
All right. But he also said that when he was working ahead of Homeland Security, he said when he got up, he came to work, and if there was people knew he would be pissed if there was 1,000 people they apprehended, because he said that's a disaster. He said now they're getting 4,000 a day. He said that's an unsustainable.
Hey everybody, right here, Burt Watson, Chevrolet, Buick, and Reese. It's October and the temps are dropping. I want to tell you a little bit about how we keep warm here in Reese. When you get your oil changed, we keep your used oil, store it, and heat the entire building with it all winter long. That's why we're able to be home with a $14.95 oil change. When you change your oil with us, you're getting a great deal, helping the environment, and keeping us warm.
Watson Chevrolet.
Thank you.
I want to bring in now former Secretary of Homeland Security under President Obama, Jay Johnson. Jay, good morning. Where do we begin with what the Homeland Security Secretary is proposing here? I guess first, just in terms of what our country is about, do these proposals even come close to representing America?
Well, first, Mika, thanks for having me. A little bit of context here. When I was in office in Kirstjen Nielsen's job at her desk, I'd get to work around 6:30 in the morning, and there'd be my intelligence book sitting on my desk, the PDB, and also the apprehension numbers from the day before. And I'd look at them every morning. It'd be the first thing I'd look at, and I probably got too close to the problem. And my staff will tell you, if it was under 1,000 apprehensions the day before, that was a relatively...
That was a relatively good day.
That's the best Golden Milk ever.
Oh, hold on. We got about 5 seconds. They're killing me.
Yeah, you're going to need your almond milk as a base. Right. Then you're going to need your turmeric.
Good number. And if it was above 1,000, it was a relatively bad number, and I was going to be in a bad mood the whole day. On Tuesday, there were 4,000 apprehensions. I know that 1,000 overwhelms the system. I cannot begin to imagine what 4,000 a day looks like.
Okay. There you go, Scott. What you were trying to say, or what you did say.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. So, my thought is, I would say if the border was closed a week, and I'm going to make a rough call on this, I'm going to say if the border was closed a week, most every assembly plant for the Detroit 3 would be closed down within 2. Or maybe longer until they get the supply loop back. Am I off base on that, folks? Anybody?
Well, as far as my plan goes, all of our aluminum castings for the four-cylinder engine for Chrysler, for the World Gas and Tiger Shark engines, all come from Mexico. And we normally have a day to maybe a day and a half supply in stock in the plant, so we'd be shut down really quick.
Wow. Wow. Now, I'm trying to think of different components that the Detroit 3 would use that comes out of Mexico.
Oh, shit, there's a lot, Scott. Man, there's a lot of the hoses. No, a lot of the hoses anymore are all molded down there. All that shit left our sweatshops and went to their sweatshops because, you know, they wanted cheaper labor yet.
I don't think it would take 2 weeks to shut down a Detroit 3 myself.
What, no. Wiring harnesses? Wiring harnesses? Headlights?
Springs?
Fuel line hoses, cables, all that shit's down there anymore.
Wow. That's pretty amazing. It was just a thought. When I heard that, I told my wife, I said, and I'm not trying to read into more of this than what it is, but I'm saying, what if that was the president's way of kind of digging back at the auto industry that doesn't want to bring jobs back to Mexico? I'm just saying, that could be... Okay. I didn't know.
He's going to crash the whole...
I like him, but I don't think he gives a shit about the auto worker.
No, but I don't think he'd do that for that reason.
Right. Right.
No, absolutely not. Brian, you're back on.
Yep.
Hey. I was reading an article from Bloomberg this last week talking about Georgetown, and I don't think people know all concessions that Georgetown accepted or that the concessions they offered just
from
work in the future.
From
Pardon?
When, Scott? Georgetown's been given concessions since the 70s. I mean, they were the ones that experienced the first AWS and all the other bullshit. It was through them came the creation of the GM Gypsy.
Right. No. I mean, people need to realize they took the material department. They basically farmed that out. They offered to take their skilled trades as part of the concession and farm them out and bring an outside supplier or trade people in. I'm just saying, these are some of the things that they did in 2017, and they basically gave up $118 million a year in annual concessions to save the plant. And then here it is a year and a half later, and they're closing the plant.
This is what happens when you're in a global market, and they tell you that you have to be viable and competitive with foreign labor markets. So when they keep talking about North American losses, but they don't talk about the global gains, they're playing each country's labor market the same way. So they're always going to announce losses, but they're never going to talk about the global gains, and there's no way of finding out because the United States government don't have jurisdiction to see what they're making overseas. So
no doubt.
We're going to continue down this
only
path.
Because
we're in a global market.
Too. Right. But you kind of see what they make when you go to the manufacturer's website and look at the investor's part. You can see what they're making globally, at least what they're reporting to. Let's put it that way. You know what I mean? I mean, you just have to find a way of getting General Motors LM2 to just see what these guys are really doing. I guess. I don't know.
Well, my thing is the leadership's going to keep pushing these concessions, saying that we have to stay viable and competitive, and each local's leadership is going to be forced to sell those contracts, and they're going to lie and deceive the membership, making them think that's the best they can get in order for us to stay viable and competitive, and we're going to keep being on the losing end of that.
Right. Well, everybody thinks that they dropped the cruise because the cruise wasn't selling. The cruise was the sixth highest selling vehicle sign. The reason Mary Barra dropped it was because she doesn't give a shit about market share. It's all about profit. And she wasn't making a lot of money on the cruise. People say all sorts of things about the market, but Mary Barra told you it's all about the money. She's been saying it for 2 years. It's all about profitability.
I agree, because if Honda and Toyota and all of them, Nissan, are selling vehicles, selling cars, I don't understand the fact that GM, Ford, or Chrysler can't sell cars neither. But like you said, it's all about the profits. They want more profits, so they sell the big-end vehicles.
Right. Right. And that's,
but then when
sure
gas prices
that,
go up
yeah.
to $4 or $5 a gallon, then what?
Well, then I guess they wish they would have never got rid of the Cruze. But technically, they have it. They have, but they haven't. You know, because like you guys said, or John was talking about, or you were saying, they go to the Black Law Dictionary and see what that word means in a legal reference, not in a sense of a word like we would think of a Webster's or a Merriam-Webster's dictionary. What that word meant to us, when you go to Black Law Dictionary, that word may have a completely different meaning. And instead of saying idle or closed, what was the dirty word they used? It failed
idled.
Me right now.
Idled.
No,
they
I don't
idled.
Think you said idled.
Yeah, I believe they used the word idled. I think they said idled.
Yeah, because, well, I have an idea. Yeah, because that has a completely different meaning than close, that's for sure. Either way, the bottom line was that wasn't agreed to in the national contract. That was a violation of the General Motors UAW National Agreement signed in 2015. That was a violation of that. What did our tough people down at Tall Dirty House do? We sued them. We sued.
And I thought that got thrown out of court, didn't it?
Not yet. General Motors last week asked the judge to throw the case out. That has not, as far as I know, that has not been printed.
So say hypothetically it does. What's the leadership going to do there? They're not going to call a strike because they're sitting on GM stock still, and they oversee the VEBA.
Right. You know what they're going to do? I'll tell you what they're going to do. They're going to come back to the membership and say, we tried our hardest. We tried our hardest. We didn't leave nothing on that table. I'm sorry. I just that you guys heard it at Chrysler. We heard it at General Motors, and the brothers and sisters at Ford are all heard the same thing. We fought our hardest. We didn't leave nothing on that table. The baloney.
Now we read the FBI thing and found out, no, you didn't leave shit. You had a biscuit sopping up all that damn gravy, you greedy bastard, you.
No gravy for us. We're going to eat it all. Give me more biscuits.
Well, the reason they didn't leave nothing on the table is because nothing was ever put on the table.
That's what I mean. They took it off before it ever got there.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody gets 18 months in a tether. That would have been you or me, Brian. We wouldn't get out until we were, shit, my grandkids had kids.
Right.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable the shit they're letting them get away with. What I don't understand, but I do understand, is the NRB's with them. I mean, hell, I had my hearing and all that shit, and I saw all that shit that they got away with. But it's like, even when we had some appeals on some elections, Scott, that we won, they took a year and a half, 2 years. Well, you were so far into the term, we'll just let them stay and we'll have another election. Huh? And that's what they did, because by the time they ruled that it was a messed up election, there was only 9 months left in that term. Well, we'll just wait.
Right. Speaking of elections, we're having elections at the
at the truck plant now. They've redistricted, added some people, moved some people around. And I'm sure some people who went from one shift to another shift had the seniority to hold that shift and went through the proper channels to get to that shift. I'm just saying. I'm hearing that we are going to be losing all the sequence work when the new truck is really starts running, and that we're going to bring in LSI or Link. We'll now be doing our sequencing at the front assembly plant. That's what I'm hearing. I'm not saying it's constantly up, but that's what I'm hearing. So I'm wondering how far away is material then? Are we going to go the way of Lordstown and Lake Orion?
I got a question for you. My neighbor out here did a lot of work in that new tank plant. He's telling me they bought, like, special agreements with these companies and in the new assembly plant where UAW tradesmen are only going to work on that machinery while the machine is running production. On the weekends, they got people that they bought warranties from in, and they're bringing their people in to do the heavy-duty bulk work, maintenance work. So, therefore, if that is true, do you know anything about that?
Wow. No. But I think I know somebody I could probably ask that question to. I won't have an answer until next week, of course. But, wow. So, if I get this right, while we're running, the General Motors Division 2 Skilled Trades will work on the machinery. But when it's down for no production, they bring in the manufacturer's selected work crew, so to say, of their tradespeople to come in and really get in and fix the machinery.
Yeah, the people that bought the machinery. They bought the machinery from these people with a warranty plan and a maintenance plan, he said.
Wow.
He said they will do all that on the weekends and non-production schedule. He goes, the union guys won't be able to do that stuff. Now, if they have a breakdown during the production time, yeah, they'll fix it or make a temp. I don't know. There's a lot of things that's very interesting because, like I said, if they did that with them two plants over there, that would be a huge hit on trades.
Oh, you think? Absolutely it would be. But I'm just saying that I'm hearing that there's some changes coming to my plant now. And I don't hear anybody talking about it. You know what I mean? I don't hear anybody talking about it. And like I said, there's elections going on for most of the committee men and the alternate committee people and for one shop committee at large. I'm not there to run, so I can't because the situation I'm in right now. But all I'm saying is it's happening, and I want to know what this is costing them because you're not fighting to keep jobs at our plant because we're going to slowly need 1,000 more people. We all know they're going to want at least 1,000 more temporaries. If they get at least 900 temporaries, they'll probably hire 100 people. So you say they hired, yeah.
You were talking about sequencing and everything. I believe now this is long before, you know how far ahead General Motors plans their vehicles or whatever. Well, before I was, before I retired, I think Gorney, I can't remember which one, but he said, people aren't going to like the new truck. They'll love the new truck, but they're not going to like what we're going to have to give up to get this new truck. And this might be what he was talking. He said, we're going to give up jobs. UAW, or not UAW jobs per se, but our factory, what we're used to get this new vehicle. Now, this might be part of it, because we've been talking about this for a long time. You know, they were talking about material being gone and now sequencing. This could be part of getting this vehicle.
Now, I got a friend that's tradesman over at a Ford plant out, I think it's called Sterling Stamping. Does that sound right? But they have an assembly. It's an assembly plant out there. It's a Ford plant. I shouldn't call it a stamping. But he told me in the last 18 months, their plant alone has put in over 100 robots. He says, wow. Jimmy, it's crazy. He says, this one line is all robots, and they've created a new trade for a skilled trade where all he does is plug all the shit in when it gets down to the end of the line. He goes, there's actually nobody on this 70-foot line except for this guy plugging wires in.
Oh, man.
Wow.
That's something. That's
one person.
Something.
It's what he said. I've been trying to get him to come back on the show. I got him on the show a couple times a couple years ago. You guys might remember he was a Ford worker. I guess that was all the way back to 15 because it was contract time. And, he's really just telling me some of the stuff we stay talking. And some of the, like I said, we don't see what's going on at Chrysler. You don't see what's going on at GM. None of us know what the hell's going on with Ford. So like Brian and Scott and all of us have been saying, somehow we all need to get together, put our heads together, and that way we'll come up with a hell of a plan.
Yeah. It definitely needs to happen, and it needs to happen soon, because otherwise I can tell you that either we're going to be losing our health care or we're going to be paying a whole hell of a lot in our health care, and any wage gains that we get are going to be eaten up by the health care.
So then it won't be any gains, really.
That's correct.
Exactly. It'll be a war.
So,
again, so we're on the losing end.
So whatever we are going to do, we need to discuss it. We need to find a meeting place. We need to discuss the issues, the solutions, and then figure out how we're going to implement those solutions and make something happen.
I'm going to be honest with you guys and talking right now. I'm like 3/4 of the way out the door in retirement, so I will support anything you guys want.
Well, even retirees, I mean, the fact is...
Oh, I agree, but I just wanted you to know, so
right.
They won't even let me in. They won't even let me near the plant.
No, what I'm saying is, I'm just talking on a member's basis, outside of the leadership, that we unify, we discuss our issues and our solutions and how to implement those solutions. Because even with the retirees, you got to worry about the VEBA collapsing, you got to worry about your pensions getting cut, so on and so forth, right? So we all... And I mean, the retirees got experience, they got knowledge, and a lot of them went through some things back in the day. So maybe they can put a spotlight on something that maybe the people today don't see. So I think everybody needs to get involved some way or another, and we all need to meet up at least to discuss it. But whatever we come up with as far as a solution and figure out how we're going to implement that, you know, whether people decide they're going to stand or they're going to sit back, it's up to them. But I think we all have a responsibility to each other, because if one of us falls, we're all going to fall. And it's just a matter of time.
I agree. And that's why I wish the people that listen to the show would write letters to Don or somebody. Let us know what you're thinking so we know what the hell we need to do. Because like... Brian just said, we need to get together. We need to do it before this contract, my friends, because I don't know. This might be the last one.
Well,
yeah.
I'll say this. I don't give this union no more than 15, 20 years before it collapses. I mean, once autonomous vehicles come in, it's going to kill off at least 60,000 jobs, if not more.
That's where you're wrong. They're going to be here. We're not. They're going to have teachers. They're going to have casino workers. They're going to be people. But it ain't going to be us.
Yeah, but if the teachers, I mean, you've seen what happened in the past with the teachers. The leadership didn't stand with the teachers. The teachers went out on their own and said, screw you. We want improvements. And so they went
and
organized and led without the leadership.
And they Teamsters, won. That was in West Virginia.
Teamsters is putting pressure on their leadership now because their leadership tried to force a contract on them. So if the teachers can do it and the Teamsters membership is doing it to putting pressure on their leadership, what's going on with the UAW members? How come we're not doing something similar to the teachers or the members of Teamsters? Why ain't we organizing and leading and coming up with solutions and putting pressure on our leadership the same way?
Yeah, because now's the best time to do it.
Sure, we have no excuse outside of laziness.
Well,
and that's not an excuse.
Scott, you remember somewhere in our national agreement it says our chairman is responsible for our actions and our attitude?
That was put in the White Pages.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
That might be some of the reason why they're not telling us that, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if they chastised them 8 ways to Sunday, even if the SOBs wanted to do something.
Okay, well, let me say it outside of that. They're only responsible for you when you're in the plant. What you do outside of the plant is you're considered protected activity, and it's your constitutional right to free speech and peaceful protest. They cannot do anything outside of work hours.
I agree.
That's right.
So let's use the rights and the laws that we have on the books for us and utilize them.
Here, here.
A very, very valuable point there. That's why I'm, just like I said, I can't support something where I'm breaking the law. I know that because once we do that, you ain't going to beat it. I mean, if that's one thing Martin Luther King taught us all was peaceful demonstrations will win in the end. Yeah, I might come out of this sucker with one eye and all my teeth kicked out, you know, but like I said,
I don't know. Those guys back in the 1930s when they established the union, supposedly they were breaking laws.
Yeah, you're
but they
right
still
there.
Did it. Right?
You're right.
And they were unjust laws.
Not just they broke laws, but they came up with labor laws. They came up with pensions and health care and rights and dignity and respect and good wages and benefits. I mean, they did a lot of things. So we can do the same thing. Just because it's a law doesn't mean that law is right.
In our Constitution, it says that we have the right not follow an unjust law. And the
National Labor Relations Board says you have a right to your concerted protected activity. So whether your chairman's responsible for you under work hours, that's one thing. But what you do off of company time, that's a whole different story.
I got a question to ask on that statement because I'm very confused there. And maybe Scott can help me here too. Well, what is that, the next tier plan up there, Bay City or somewhere up there? Them people are getting fired for just talking bad about it in a parking lot or bad about their own union.
It's because people don't realize what rights they have. If they realize that they have a right to their concerted protected activity, then they know they have 6 months within the time that they get disciplined to go file a complaint with the National Labor Relations Board. If they're not doing that, then of course they're going to get fired and never come back. And the union is just going to go through the fundamentals of making it look like they're representing them. But the reality is
that.
Right. So you got to know your rights.
Knowledge is power.
And that's where we come in. Because now we're not just going to sit there and talk about what our issues are or what our solutions are, but we also got to help educate the membership. So these are all key factors in making this happen. We got to utilize whatever we can utilize. And it only happens if we all get around the table and we discuss these issues like we are tonight. But we have to do it in private because if you try to organize something over the air, once management and the leadership get a of it, they're going to figure out how to stop it.
Right.
Good point.
So we need to get the key figures together. We got to figure out how we're going to lead this and organize this, and then we can move from there. But my thing is, who's willing to volunteer to do this? I'm one person, but who else is going to volunteer?
I'm in.
That's what we need, volunteers.
I'm in.
I'm right
here. Because what do we got to lose? We're already losing.
That's right.
I'll ride with Single Decker and Kyle Tracy. Might as well have the Three Stooges.
Might as well.
There you go.
and I'm going to be real. Look, we're all going to have different opinions on certain things, right?
Right.
We're all going to have disagreements. We're all going to handle things differently. But at the end of the day, let's remember what we all share in common, right? And we understand what issues we share, because a lot of these locals, whether you're GM, Ford, Chrysler, parts supply, or whatever, we all share a lot of the same issues. Now we just need to figure out what solutions are going to correct those issues and how we implement those solutions and how we're going to get the information out to educate the membership, and hopefully we can figure out how we're going to unify this membership to stand with us. Because WS don't even have a fight in this game. They're not even union. But they're out there. They have an agenda, whatever their agenda is. But they're out there putting up a fight. You had the teachers stand against their leadership. They put up a fight. You got the Teamsters membership putting up a fight with their leadership. But the UAW members are sitting idle. We're not doing nothing. We have no excuse for this. So something's got to happen, and it's got to happen now.
The UAW used to be the leader in almost every movement, in the labor movement, in the civil rights movement. The UAW was always in the forefront.
Yeah, but that's before they got NTC funds that lined their pockets, and they decided to dummy down the membership by not educating them.
That's right.
They figured they're going to get their own, and then basically when it all comes collapsing, they're going to have something when we don't.
Yeah,
exactly right. Exactly right.
All I'm saying is we cannot keep thinking with this mentality of going through the process, because the process is broke. It doesn't work. We have to get that 1930s mentality back. Otherwise, we will lose. And that is fact. You cannot play their game using what they designed. They designed it for them to win, not for us. And I see, a good example was Scott. They said he was out of order. They told him appeal it. What do you think is going to happen? They shut him down. They didn't want to listen to the membership. Scott was voted in as a delegate to represent his membership. He went down there to do just that, and he got shut down. Meaning the leadership said, we're not listening to you. We're not listening to you or your membership. The other delegate thought, well, I'm going to drink the Kool-Aid. I'm going to get wined and dined. And maybe if I'm lucky, I'll get in a position there at the region or the Solidarity House. So they sold out on their members.
But you got to remember, though, too, when it was put to a vote to the members at the convention, they went against Scott as well. They didn't stand with him or the membership. So that shows that the membership needs to pay attention to who they send and who they elect. And we outnumber the cronies by far.
But my question is this. Most people that get a title end up changing. Their whole mentality and thought process ends up changing. How do you know that you're voting for somebody that's not weak-minded, and that's not going to be influenced later?
Never will.
Right. Or how do you know if they have the knowledge to go down there? You don't. They might talk a good game, but it doesn't mean they know what the hell they're doing. And that's obvious. I mean, we've been going decades through this, and nobody's been able to put a stop on the leadership selling us out. Even with me, with this class action lawsuit, which, by the way, the The brief was sent into the 6th District Court of Appeals on Friday, hopefully in the middle of April sometime. Hopefully we'll find out if the judge decides to hear the case or not. But if they don't, I told you guys before, that is my belief, if the court case class action lawsuit gets shut down, the complaint with the National Labor Relations Board gets shut down as well. And then where's that leave us? That's why I'm saying sometimes, you know, going through the process ain't the answer, because sometimes the process was designed for us to fail. So we got to think outside of the box. We're either going to unify and stand together and fight for our way of life, or we're going to let them lead us down the wrong path until we have nothing.
Well, I agree to a point on that, because if you don't always know what somebody's going to do, but there are indicators that people give on whether or not they're going to be true to their word. And
I don't know. There's a lot of guys that get married thinking their wife is going to be dedicated to them until death do them part. And then the next thing you know, the wife has a different set of a different mindset 20 years down through the marriage. And all of a sudden, guess what? She done left them and took everything. So you don't really know.
That's yes, but
you know, there before.
It isn't always the case.
Yeah.
And I think that you know, I've demonstrated through my actions to my fellow members at the plant that I have absolutely been completely open and honest and transparent with them, that I have shown that I am consistent in that my actions that I have demonstrated, because I've been a team leader before as well, that
okay,
I
so
don't...
So let me say this then. One person out of all the elected and appointed positions in your local. You know how many people it would take
just,
for us to reform this leadership?
There's more people out there like that than just me. I mean, we all know that there's, you know, we've got, it doesn't matter what organization or who you work for, where you work, you've always got a few individuals that that are loners, that are selfish, that don't support or work with their coworkers well at all. You've got people that are constant troublemakers, break the rules.
But John, do you hear what you're saying? You're saying that you feel that even if you're elected, that we can still change this through elections. We can still change this through the process. I'm telling you that I don't believe we can change this through the process. And it's been proven, and not just that, time's not on our side. We don't have time to wait for the membership to reelect every elected position and hope for change. My thing is, the only way we're going to get change is through those Solidarity House gates. Because if we're going to go through the process, we're going to continue to lose. That's just my view.
Not necessarily, because the majority of the people that are working in the different plants, and it doesn't matter if you're in the big three or parts suppliers, the majority of people are good people.
I agree with that. But
just because they're good people, it doesn't mean they have the knowledge to go against the leadership. They don't have that knowledge.
They don't have the power to go against the leadership. If you gave one member one vote, I'd say, yeah, that'd be a great change.
Yes, I agree. But, and we could possibly get through that. We could possibly get that one member one vote through the complaint with the National Labor Relations Board if it goes through.
Amen.
Well, what I'm saying is, though, is that, like you said, continued discussion and education, right? When we all join together, doesn't matter who you work for, we all should be reaching out, helping each other, helping the good people get that knowledge and sharing with them and informing them of how they're able to stand up and take control. We can help in that respect, too. So
I'm just saying I don't think time is on our hands.
Well, I'm looking at the long-term big picture. Right now, our focus needs to be on this contract and coming together in solidarity and standing up on this contract, right? And
yes.
So, yes, I agree with you that we are running out of time and we're going to have to get down there and we're going to have to protest and we're going to have to demand that they fight for what we deserve, right? So I agree with you on that. But I'm talking long term. If we're going to heal our house, we need to completely control and get rid of these cronies and these sellout Kool-Aid drinkers to the corruption, because we outnumber them, and we're going to have to clean house everywhere.
I think the only way we're going to reform this leadership is if somehow the government pushes the one member, one vote. Outside of that, going through the election process, I don't see it happening anytime soon.
It's not going to happen overnight, but I think that a multi-pronged approach gives us a better shot than just choosing one single route.
I don't know
what I'm saying?
When you look at the last UAW Constitutional Convention, when you had Leroy, me, Gary Wachowicz, I mean, that was a slam dunk, man. Gary Jones just fucking wiped his ass with us. I mean, completely. They controlled at least 98% of those delegates.
And if we had replaced those delegates with the right people, that wouldn't have happened.
I don't see it being that easy of a solution.
Right.
Well, it's going to be a battle to get those people replaced. I mean, it's going to be a lot of reaching out and talking and educating our fellow brothers and sisters all across the UAW to the importance of...
Most come to work just to get a paycheck. How many people show up to the union meetings?
Right. We've got two minutes left, fellas.
They've never been given a good reason to. For years,
a good reason?
Reason.
They were given a good reason. The fact that we lost pensions, the fact that we lost COLA, the fact we took these concessions and plants shut down, that's a good enough reason to show up to your union meetings.
But when you think you're alone, right?
Do what?
A lot of people won't do it on their own.
Well, I mean, what are we supposed to do? Handcuff them and pull them on our bumpers?
No, but now we... There's more of us now that want, like you said, we might differ slightly in how to go about things or small detail stuff, but the basics, we're all on the same page, right? We all want to get and end the corruption. We want a representation, strong representation, that defends and fights for the membership and for the betterment, not for concessions and sellouts.
My mindset is to go down there with a pair of pliers and a bucket of water with a rag. That's my idea.
Right. We got 30 seconds left, fellas.
Oh, sorry.
Well, you know, a good sturdy.
That's the only way you're. Look, that's the only way you're going to cleanse. That's the only way you're going to cleanse the leadership.
I don't think it's the only way, but yes. I think a multi-prong approach, because you know there have been things.
The multi-prong approach is what they've been doing to us. They've been sticking a multi-prong up our asses for the last 4 or 5 decades.
Well, that's why we need to get out there and let the people know, hey, there are more of us now that are willing to stand up with you. We support you. We'll help educate you.
Support me. We need to support each other.
Alone.
It's not about supporting me. It's about supporting each other.
No, that's what I'm saying is that
oh, okay.
We need to let the people know that, hey, we're out here. there's more of us standing up and fighting. It's okay to come out now and stand up and fight. You're not alone. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because that's the worst thing people fear is being stuck out there on their own. Because it's unless you have the numbers, it's hard to win by yourself. Believe me, I know. I've been fighting in my plant for 12 years, and finally I'm starting to gain some headway.
And I agree we need the numbers. But, hell, I'm one individual. And I went out there and I protested with you at the Labor Day parade a few years. I've gone out in front of that Solidarity House. I've gone to the Constitutional Convention. I've been wrongfully suspended and fired 9 times. So I know. But I continue to fight, and I've continued to move forward. But I can't do it without the help of my union brothers and sisters. We have to get this round table going. We have to get the discussions going and the solutions, and we got to implement those solutions.
Well, and like I said, part of that is definitely going to be getting out there and reaching the membership to let them know there's help out there and there's support, and there's more of us than there are of them.
Well, I think there's a lot of people that are scared. I think there's a lot of Kool-Aid drinkers. So that kind of diminishes our numbers.
Well, yes, there's a lot of them, but there's less of them than there are of us because the international can't buy everybody off. They've only bought off us. I mean, in the big picture, they've only bought off a small portion.
Okay, and they scared the big portion.
Made them favoritism, right? But there's still only a minority.
But they still scared the big portion. Even though they bought off the small portion of people, they still scared off the big portion of union members that are afraid to fight.
And unfortunately, it's the little group of people that have the majority of the control of what goes on. And what the little group of people who control this do is they go out and they hire PR firms. That's going to happen again. You watch.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, PR firms, they got the shit scared out of them last contract because we went to Facebook. We all started talking. I'm hearing Arlington is looking at they're trying to do mandatory Sundays at Arlington now. That's wrong. Our plan just worked a Sunday, but it was voluntary. But they went to 10 hours with it. What happens is these people who get to control the small amount of people, they're the right place to have to control the masses. So if you look back at, I believe it was Plato. Didn't Plato have the thing with the guy in the cave? Remember, if you put the people on one side of the fire and you're on the other side of the fire, it's your shadow. You look monstrous when actually you're just small.
But we're onto their tactics now, and we can catch them and call them out and shut them down.
But we have been calling them out.
That's just it. If the people who get caught out, and you have to have more people doing like what we're doing now, we've been doing for 13 years, 14 years, something like that, is because they try to catch them people as they speak out, they go after them one way or another. I mean, I'm not going to mention the poor guy's name who was on off company property on his own time, and they fired him. Okay, that's kind of bullshit. That's going to happen, but if there's more and more of us, they won't be able to keep up with all of it at one time. And having enough people who are willing to fight, if I'm hearing you right, you think people are ready to really start fighting more now. More people are. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, I think they are ready because I think that the majority of us are sick of losing. And we're sick of seeing our good union's name run through the mud because of those pieces of shit that are sitting up at Solidarity House selling us out.
Right.
So I think that people's eyes are opened now more than ever because we have the proof that our representation has been corrupted. There's proof.
Sure.
So through continued communication, education, the more we can start reaching out and people sharing and realizing that they aren't alone, there is support for them, I think that as we get closer and closer to contract, I think we're going to see a tremendous increase in our numbers. And like I said, we outnumber them. And once they learn and fully understand, I think it might take this contract for them to realize the power that they have when they vote it down, right? And we fight and together and we win, and they realize that power that we as a collective membership have, then we're going to start. I think we're going to start shutting down the cronies. They're going to realize that they are the minority, and they can no longer control us or scare us because we have the numbers on our side. We're the good people fighting for our families, for our brethren to do better, and they're not. And I think we're going to come together and shut them down. But I think it's going to take this contract, to coming together over this contract, to really get the membership to truly feel and understand the power that they have, and that they're not alone.
We got to take on the bullies. We got to fight the bullies.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to. Bullies aren't
yes,
that tough.
Exactly.
It's how much power you let them have.
Bullies are always the minority.
Yep. Well, I'll see what we can do. But we're just taping now. We're kind of into overtime, so. You only have so much of that time, too. Right.
I think I'm about done for the night. I got some other things that I got to work on. But great conversation.
Oh, it's good to hear. Yeah, it's good to hear, Brian. Jill?
Do what?
Yeah. Yes. Hello?
It was good to hear you guys. Oh,
yeah,
thanks.
Certainly. We'll be back next Sunday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Maybe we'll get some of the people in the sports world to push one on their keypad, and we'll get you right on. And this is for Brian. No, it isn't. That's the wrong one. That's still the wrong one. I can't find nothing.
Get it together, John.
I'm getting old. I'm old. Give me a break. All right. I can't get
I'm about to whip somebody's ass.
This is for Brother Brian.
Oh, I'm about to whip somebody's ass. Oh, if you don't leave me alone, you're going to have to send me home. Because I'm about to whip somebody's ass.
Scott, John, Jimmy, Brian, and everybody in the switchboard. Thank you for being with us. You're making UAW show one of the top shows on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you very much. And we'll see you next Sunday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Goodbye.
Night, everybody.
Well, when I say when you gotta go, you gotta go.